the nephews who are in their 20s who don't get along because their mommies don't get along over a ring. That's alcoholism. And I wish I could get those two, and I get along with both of them because I'm not fighting with anybody. Those days are over. I'm done feuding. I'm not on anybody's side. There are no sides, right? Everybody's been invited to the party. That's what I know. If you don't know it, call me, right? Let's see if we can have a conversation and I can share what has opened up for me as I've gotten access to my heart, the gift that you have given me when I show up here and do the work and do the service so that this is available for the people that are coming behind me, right? But I wish nothing more than if I could get those two sisters in a room, right? And I'd put the ring in one hand, maybe have, what, I don't know, 20 grand, whatever the ring's worth, the dopey ring. I'd have 20 grand in this hand, the ring in this hand. I'd say, okay, somebody gets the ring, somebody gets the cash, pick. They'd both pick. Then I'd knock their heads together, because why not? And say, can we be done with this now? Can we get back to being a family? And will you go home and tell your kids that so that your kids can get along now? This is the tragedy. This is what we're talking about. See, it would be great if it was just about the food. If that was as far as it went, that would be terrific. It doesn't. You know, I'll jump into the big book thing here, but there's a woman who called me. I've known this woman for about a dozen years, right? Because there's a lot of people, you know, I wouldn't know this woman, again, I've never seen her, but we've talked, we've probably had 50 hours of talking over the years. And she's back in the food. And she wants to know if I'll sponsor her. And we had a long conversation this afternoon. And I don't even know if my sponsor will let me take on another sponsee at this point. But one of the things that I brought up to her, because she's she's 65 years old, is I said that she doesn't realize the damage that she's causing the people around her. You know, so we had a real, very powerful conversation where she saw some things that she really hadn't been thinking about. How this has an effect on people. My eating disorder has an effect on everybody that I come in contact with. And again, we had that wonderful conversation, and one of the last things she said is, thank you so much. She said, I'm glad that you threw a glass of water in my face. I'm glad that you shocked the heck out of me and just threw a glass of water in my face about this. And I said, here's the thing. I would invite you. I'm a writer, and I think I know words have power. I said, I would invite you to have a different conversation about it. I said, because the reality is, I didn't throw a glass of water in your face. Maybe you want to say something like, we had a revelatory conversation where you got an opportunity to see something you hadn't seen up to this point. I said, now you can say whatever you want to say. I said, but the problem with saying something like that, or saying like, oh, I need a really hard sponsor, right? Some offensive comment like that, or people will talk about Nazi sponsors, that is offensive on about 28 different levels. That is so, don't, no, right? No. But the problem with even saying something like, I need a really hard sponsor, I need a really tough sponsor, I said, the problem is, you're going to get off the phone, and you've just given a real good foothold to that wicked witch disease. For that disease to say, you know, this shrew in L.A., right? She gotta go. You just gave your disease free rein to have a conversation with you at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's gonna say something like, "You don't. I don't even know her. Who is she? Cut her loose. Who does she think she is? Right? Let her. You don't want to do that. So if you instead say something like, I don't need a hard sponsor, but I need somebody who will support me in having a different experience, which I want to have this time. right? So then she saw that side of it, and it was so, I'm so glad that we can do that here, that you've taught me how to have a conversation here. I know how to apologize. I know how to work a 10-step, as it talks about on page 84 in the book. I know how to do that. I give myself plenty of opportunities to practice that, right? But I like that. I like it a lot. I had a problem when I got to the hotel on Thursday, and there was a problem when I went in for lunch. And you know, I have a lot of specific things I can and can't eat, so when a waiter walks over and says, can I take your order, I say, okay, are you ready? Right? Is your pencil sharpened? Let's go. So there was a problem, and I tried to clear up the problem, and he's walking away, and he said something about, I'll handle it, don't get touchy. And I said, you know, that's unkind. Right? And then he's arguing with me while I'm listening to the table of men behind me kind of listen, because this is intriguing, right? And I'm thinking, I bet he wouldn't have said to them, you know, don't get touchy. So, but I'm not going to argue for too long. I did for about 30 seconds. But then he said, look, I was just trying to be helpful. I said, well, I think the most helpful thing you can do at this point is to stop talking, right? So then he goes to the kitchen. I think, oh, this can't be good. This is the beginning of a 12-step weekend. I'm sure he's going to do a number on my order when he does bring it back, right? And so then the executive chef comes out, and he has a loving conversation. And then 5 minutes later, the guy comes out, and he's completely changed his attitude, and he apologizes. He says he's really sorry. And I leaned in, and I said, you know what? I'm really sorry, too. And we're like holding hands. I mean, it was a love fest now. It's a love fest. And he said, I don't know what I was thinking about. And I said, and I said, here's the thing. I said, you might be right. It might be that I was a little touchy. I said, but I'm not sure that that's the way to play it, to tell me that, right? And I said, and I'll be honest with you, because now I'm saying the thing with him, because I've not even run this by my sponsor, because I don't need to now, because I had the conversation with him, because I got to say to him, I'm not sure that you would have said to one of the guys at the table behind me that they didn't need to be so touchy. And he said, you know what? You're right. I probably wouldn't have. So then I'm in there last night for dinner, and he's just like, hi, Sheila, how are you? And he's like, Wendy, is there anything you need? You know, do you want anything? I mean, it was just a love fest. That's what we get here. That's what happens here when you learn how to apologize and say you're sorry. I mean, you know, you apologize to a clerk in a Macy's, and they want to, inevitably what somebody will say when you apologize to somebody in retail, they'll say, oh, that's all right. You don't need to apologize. And I'll say, no. It's actually not all right. It's not all right for me to talk to you like that. I'm really sorry. And I'm telling you, they want to put free stuff in your bag. They do. They just want to give you stuff. And I know, because I worked in retail. Nobody apologizes to people in retail, right? I never got apologized to. So it's transformative what happens when we work the steps as they're outlined in the book. So what I tell people, right, inevitably, when I get a call from a chronic slipper, and by the time somebody gets to me, they've been through the ringer. If somebody's only been banging their head against the wall for 5 years, that's a short amount of time by the time they get to me. I mean, you need to be pretty badly mangled to be willing to do all of the things that the book directs me to offer you and have you do. You have to be pretty far gone, right? Because you've been standing in front of a wall for a lifetime, right? You've been doing this for a long time. You stand in front of the wall, you bend over like this, and you're going to run as fast as possible into that wall, and wham, you're going to hit the wall, and you're going to, you know, fall on the ground, and, you know, you're going to have the cartoon birds and stars going around your head, and you're going to stand up and shake out and say, I'm never doing that again. But I wonder about that wall. Right? Right? And you're going to turn, and I'm telling you, they've been doing that 360 for years, right? By the time by the time we get together. And so, which is good, which is good. It's that gift of desperation. And we're going to get moving. And we're going to get moving really quickly. And I always will start, I'll have people read chapter 7, Working with Others. And I say, pay special attention to page 96. There's a paragraph at the page top of page 96. And I want you, as you are reading your big book, right, go through, anytime you're reading a big book, make sure you got a pen and a highlighter in hand. And make sure you're highlighting and annotating. They've done studies. I'm an academic. They've done studies. You actually take in more material when you are just taking notes, right? Underlining, notes in the margin, all those kind of things. So make sure you do that. And then go back to that paragraph, read it, and write for 15 minutes and call me tomorrow. Bye. And so then, because I'm going to get information as we go along. Because like my sponsor says, I do not sponsor the easy people. I sponsor the hardest people. I always say I want the sponsee that nobody else wants. I really do. I want the pissed off person who's sitting in the back of the room who feels like they have not been invited to the party and feels like I have nothing to contribute. I have nothing to say. Those are the people I want. And this works well. I teach part-time in a middle school. I teach a creative writing class. I'm used to people, kids, being in a room, feeling like I have nothing to contribute, right? Nothing to give them. And that goes on for about the first 20 minutes of my first day of class in the fall. And then it's gone. Because my kids know how much I love them, right? They get that real clear. I talk about it. I bring that point home. And once somebody knows that they are heard and loved, the butter in your hands. And so, but I want to figure out really quickly what somebody's level of willingness is. So I'm going to give them something to do. And I'm going to tell, and they will already have known, they probably listened to something. So they already know we're going to be talking. There's going to be daily work. You're going to be reading and writing on a daily basis. All of my sponsees start meditating. I have them do 5 minutes, and within a week, they're going to be up to 15 minutes. I never bump anybody beyond 15 minutes. I meditate 40 minutes a day. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm trying to impress upon you that I take it really seriously here. And I want the whole shebang. I already lost a lot of my life to an eating disorder. I'm not going to lose any more. And I'm not going to avoid any of the things that I'm directed to do in those steps. So they know they're also going to be committing their food. They either committed at the end of the night, telling me what they ate, or they're going to be telling me what they're going to eat for the beginning of the day. You can do it either way. I kind of go back and forth. I'm now just kind of transitioning to the thing again where I want to try committing my food and eating what I've done. Eating what I've said I'm going to eat. Because it's a good exercise. And I get it that whatever I'm doing with food, I'm doing in every area of my life. So if I'm game playing, if I'm lying, if I'm fooling around, if I'm finagling, whatever it is, it's happening in every area of my life. Which is also part of the conversation I had with this woman, right? This hour-long conversation. Because, and I'll tell you, I mean, she said something and I said, boy, I really feel for your husband. Because the first 40 minutes of the conversation, I kept having to repeat stuff, and she said, "Well, now what is it again? And what, you know, where, read what? And what are you thinking? You know, what's going on?" And I said, finally, I said, "When's the last time you had sugar?" She said, "Yesterday." And I said, "I hear it." And again, this is not, she called for this, right? People know how these conversations go, and it's not mean. Remember, I'm not being mean. I'm being clear. I'm just holding up a mirror. And what I said was, I really feel for your husband because it must be very challenging for him. Because you and I've just gotten lost in a conversation. I just wonder how misunderstood he might feel. Or how much you're missing of what he's saying. And she talked about a grandchild that she has. And that for 18, that's 18 months old. You know, and I just said, I don't know what you want, but perhaps you don't want to miss out any more of that time with that grandchild, being unconscious, so that you can have Hershey's Kisses. I don't know what you want. But again, we had a really wonderful conversation, but that's the kind of thing. I want to figure out what somebody's level of willingness is, so I give them lots of things to do. So then the person calls back, and inevitably, right, they're going to write in that paragraph it talks about, it says, again, I'm paraphrasing, we find it a waste of time to try and help a man who will not work with you. And what somebody will start writing is they'll say, oh, yeah, because you want me to get it will be a waste of time and you'll let me go and fire me if whatever. I said, no, I don't fire anybody. I don't use that kind of inflammatory language. It's hurtful language. I don't ever let anybody go unless they're not doing the work. And the only reason I let you go then is because I don't know how I can be of service to you. Because you have to give me something if we're going to work together in a sponsorship relationship. You either have to give me abstinence and the work, or you got to give me the work. But if you think that in not doing the work, but you call me the next day and you've eaten beautifully, right? No sugar, no flour, no whatever, right? Weighed and measured, did all my stuff, but I didn't have time to get to the reading. But isn't that? Did you see what I ate? If somebody does that for 3 or 4 days, you're in the wrong boat. I don't know how I can be of service to you. And my guess is you're not going to be eating that way for long anyway. If you subscribe to what we believe here, I don't care what you're eating. If you're not creating that transformation, as within, so without, right? You change on the inside, you have that transformation on the inside. That's what created the transformation on the outside for me. As within, so without. I transform within. My body, the weight fell away. That's how it worked. So you got to do the work. So then I'll point out and I'll say, no, 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 no. What I wanted you to get is to understand what it's like from my perspective, that I need to make myself available to somebody who's going to show up and do the tasks. And it's really okay if you don't want to do the tasks. This isn't the only way to get abstinent. This is just what has worked for me, and it's how I was sponsored, and it's something that has worked for a lot of chronic slippers that I've sponsored over the years in OA and in the mother program. So it's something that has worked well, and all I can do is work with what I've got. But it's really okay if you don't want to do this. Let's figure this out. So it's actually a much different thing. You see, they're waiting for me to be hard. They're waiting for program to be hard, for anything to be hard, to be harsh. It's all about the love. Nobody who's ever been sponsored by me would say that I'm hard. I do know some of the conversations that are happening, and people gossip, and I hear things, right? And sometimes I overhear things. You know, I was at a big meeting in LA, and I came around the corner, and there was this big guy, and he's a good, great friend of mine from Chicago, you know. And let's just call him Tom. And he's, you know, 6'6", and he lost like 250 pounds, right? And he was real deal. I didn't sponsor him, but he was a real, he doesn't live in LA anymore, but he was a real, real, you know, big, big, powerful guy in program, right? Worked an incredible program, also in the mother program. And I was coming around the corner, and he was talking to this guy, and he said, you better get your act together, or else you're going to have to be sponsored by Sheila. And I came around the corner, and I said, Tom, what? And he said, oh, no, I meant it as a compliment. Oh, yeah, it sounds like it. Thanks, right? Right? That dumb stuff. But it's not about that. It's not about harsh or mean or anything. But it is about, if we're working together, let's take a glorious look at something that you haven't been looking at. Or let's start thinking about some of the people around you who are being so affected by your food choices and your food behaviors. Let's start bringing some of that into the mix. And so then they read that to me, and then I say, okay, now we're going to start step one. Because by the time I start working with somebody, I say, you're going to be on a four-step in a week's time. And I never start working a four-step with somebody without scheduling a fifth step. Because I heard a circuit speaker in AA say that, and I thought, that sounds good. And he says he never gives somebody a four-step assignment without setting up a fifth step. And as I recall, he said, you know, he assigned it to a guy on a Friday, the four-step, the big book four-step, the three-part four-step. And he said, so what time tomorrow? Did you want me to come over so you could read the fifth step? So for him, he says like a weekend. I give people a week. And the reality is, don't tell them, shh. if they don't have it done in a week. I'll give them one more week. But the reality is, the reason we want to clip through this is because if a four-step is as hard as you think it is and you're somebody who's been slipping, I mean, if you're going through hell, why dally? But the thing is, I've never experienced a four-step as a hellish experience. Hell to me is needing to do a four-step and not doing it. That's hell, but not doing a four-step. But they don't know that yet. So I just want them to just get through this. Plus, I'm going to send you a template for dealing with the resentment, the fear, and the sex inventory part of the inventory. So it's not going to take a long time. And the value of a big book inventory is it takes the story out of it, right? So again, it doesn't take a long time. But so I say you're going to be on a four-step in about a week's time. But for now, you're on step one, and there are four chapters, right? So it's going to be 4 days. So on the first day, they read doctor's opinion, and then you're going to write for 15 minutes. Then you'll read it to me. Then you're going to read Bill's story, right? Then you're going to read There Is a Solution, then more about alcoholism. Those are the step one portions of the big book. Then we're going to get to step two, right? And we spend 2 days on this. So that's the We Agnostics chapter. So they read it, highlight and annotate, and I say, write about the current idea of God that you have right now. Because if you're a chronic slipper and you have not gotten abstinent, or you are abstinent and you are still in your mind, never in my mind, but in your mind, you don't feel like you're at the weight you want to be at, despite the fact you're abstinent, somewhere you are not conclusively feeling safe with taking a third step and surrendering your will in your life. Because in my mind, a huge component of taking a third step is getting honest with about my food and what I'm putting in my mouth. So then we got to see what you got. We got to see what this idea of God is that you have. So then on the second day, they reread the chapter again and highlight and annotate again. And I say, now write about the idea of God that you do want. And I say, don't pine about this. This is going to be a lifelong journey in terms of this exploration of God. And while we're at it a minute, because Aaron and I were chatting about this before dinner, this whole idea of God. If anybody has concerns about God, I heard a guy, he was a lifelong Sierra Club member. I think I told you Audubon Society, but it was Sierra Club member. And he had been maintaining a weight loss for, you know, 100, he was a 100-pounder for over 25 years, and he was an atheist. And he said, for him, God is G-O-D. Get outdoors. And I thought, isn't that beautiful? And then I heard another guy, an AA, talks about how for him, God is that electrical outlet in the wall. Says because if he takes his wife's hair dryer, dips the cord in water, sticks it in the wall, he will experience a power greater than himself. Yeah? So I liked that. And then I had two sponsees independent of each other. One's in Arizona, one's in L.A. They don't know each other. In the same week, and they were both atheists. Well, one was an agnostic, one was an atheist. And they said, can I get abstinent? And I said, absolutely. Chapter 4, read it in the book. Yes, yes, and yes. But independently of each other, in the same week, they both came up with this idea, said, do you think it's possible? Could I use as my higher power love? And I said, yes. Yes, you can. Of course you can, right? Because I'd never heard that before, and I've been here a long time. And that just seemed like a revelation to me. And then the young man who really struggled, he was the one who was the atheist, he said, do you think it's possible that God's will, because I've always struggled with that, he said, do you think it's possible that God's will is maybe just taking the next loving action? And I said, oh my God, who's sponsoring whom? You know? Oy, 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 right? Like, have you ever heard anything better than that definition for God's will? Like, is that not the best? Right? So, truly, I mean, I don't sponsor people to get them absent. I wish I could. If I could, my mother and my brother wouldn't be dead. I sponsor people to keep me abstinent. I'm sponsored so that I can be spiritually aligned and so that I can learn how to form a true partnership with another human being, like the 12 and 12 tells me I don't know how to do. So that's what I do with my sponsor, right, is I work out kind of that spiritual malady. But I sponsor people to keep me abstinent. So so then we get to the step three, thank you. We get to the step three part of the book, of the AA big book. And so that's from 58 to the bottom of 63. So because you finish those steps, right, and it says being convinced, right, we were at step three. And there is some conjecture whether that's part of step two, and it doesn't matter, right? Let the alcoholics fight about that one in the rain, right? But it does say when we get to the end of how it works, right, A, B, and C. We were alcoholic and could not manage our own life. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. Being convinced, we were at step three. So we definitely know it at least starts in the middle of 60. And it goes to the bottom of 63. So I say, read those pages, right? And when you get to the top of page 63, reread that paragraph. And there's a great paragraph at the top of page 63. And I'm paraphrasing, but it says, when we honestly believed what the information we're given in the paragraph preceding, which basically says God's in charge, you're not. Get clear about that. That it goes on to talk about how we don't have to worry anymore. We've got a new employer. We got nothing to fret about. And then the last line is, we were free of fear. I can't believe I didn't bring my book down. We no longer have anything to fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. And the last line in that paragraph is, we were reborn. That's a pretty powerful promise. That's pretty powerful. Don't let anybody convince you that there's only the ninth step promises on. That book is 83 and 84. That book is full of promises. Yeah, I always say it's too bad in Alcoholics Anonymous that we don't drink anymore, because that would be a great drinking game. You turn to the big book, would it not? You turn to the big book, and whoever finds the promise first, I guess because you're an alcoholic, gets to drink, right? So it'd be like, great, I found it, I got it, right? But the book is full of promises. But that's pretty powerful. And all I have to do is not be in charge anymore. All I have to do is not be running the show. And I'm going to be free of fear today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. Thank you. Thank you very much. We were reborn. All I have to do is just not be running the show. Thank you so much. What's your name? Aliva? Alisa. Thank you, Alisa. That was kind. All right, so here's the paragraph. That's nice. That's good that we get this in here. So top of page 63, when we sincerely took such a position, again, the antecedent in the paragraph before, God's in charge, you're not. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And look at all the promises in there. It's not even just that we were reborn and, you know, I'm not going to have any fear and, you know, today, tomorrow, or life after life, right? Nothing like that. But also, it says, we became less interested in ourselves. Well, that sounds like a good promise for a self-centered compulsive overeater. Became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Sounds good. As we felt new power flow in. That's a declaration. Are you with me? These are declarations. As we enjoyed peace of mind. Declaration. Discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of his presence. Declaration. Began to lose our fear of today. I mean, look at that. Look at that over and over again. And you want a fun revelation, right? Take out. Have somebody do it. If you've got somebody in your life who kind of struggles with the whole God thing, go through any place in this book where you see the word God or higher power, cross it out and write love. Look at the third step. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to love as we understood love. 11th step. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with love as we understood love, praying only for the knowledge of love's will for us and the power to carry that out. Really powerful. So Good, good stuff. So that's step three. So then they write on that. So then, you know, we do the step four thing. I've sent them a template. There are three parts to the big book inventory. You got to like that the sex inventory starts on page 69, right? It does. It does. It does. So there's those three parts. And the magic of the resentment part, and remember, resentment is just a $2 word for I don't forgive you, asshole. That's all a resentment is. That's all a resentment is. It's nothing fancy. It's I don't forgive you. That's why I kind of put my all my focus is on love and forgiveness, right? When I do stuff at the birthday party and stuff, it's all about love and forgiveness. It's the whole shebang in my mind. And service is a natural outgrowth. Once I love and forgive somebody, I naturally want to forgive you. It's just a matter of time. But it all cracks open on that fourth column in the inventory. So the fourth column shows up in the prose section on page 67. So, because on page 65, because people will say, there's only three columns on page 65. It's like, keep reading, get to 67. It's in the prose. Talks about that's where the fourth column is. And it basically says, where am I fearful, selfish, and dishonest? It also talks about self-seeking, but I always kind of pull that out of the mix because it seems so close to selfishness to me. But that's what I want to find behind my not forgiving somebody. So let's look at my big ticket item. So the molestation, right? Because clearly that was at the top of the pile, that first inventory that I did. And I could see that I resented, let's just call him John. I resent John, molested me when I was 5, and then we'll just focus on one of them, right? So affected me in all these areas. Clearly I got affected in a lot of areas by that, but I didn't see anything in the fourth column. And I just am grateful for a lineage of good sponsorship. My sponsor has a sponsor who has a sponsor. She was just patient and loving. And when I was reading the fifth step, we had a glorious conversation. Now, it's easy to see. I guess I saw the fear part. I mean, it's easy to see where I'd end up with fear if you've been molested. And again, the only reason I'm talking about this is because it's the big ticket item. Are you with me? Because once I got through this doorway, the rest was cake. Don't I wish, right? The rest was cake. But, well, it was cake for a long time, right? I just wasn't ready to put down the sugar. But I could see where I was fearful, but I couldn't see where I was selfish and dishonest. And I remember the sponsor leaned in, and she was a lovely woman, and this was not a quick process. I was, you know, in month 5 or 6 when I was doing this first inventory. And she said, Sheila, you know that I know that it was really wrong what happened to you. I wish that hadn't happened to you, and that shouldn't happen to anybody. And she didn't have the experience. She hadn't been molested. Just about every one of my sponsees has. But she said, that was really wrong, what happened to you. You know that I know that, right? And I said, I do. She said, I'm just sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you. And I said, yeah, I get it. And she said, is it possible that in not forgiving John for that, that anger is keeping you from giving more in the world? And I said, well, maybe. And she said, and how have your relationships with other men been? I said, well, they haven't been good. And they hadn't, right? Every ex-boyfriend I had would have crossed the street if he saw me coming. And hopefully he's not going for a gun. I mean, I made every man in my life, including my brothers and my father, pay the price for what John and his cousin 5 years later did to me. I made every man. Well, that's selfish. That's selfish. And I saw that. Between that and just this whole idea that I wasn't as available in the world to give and love because of this horrible thing that had happened to me. That was selfish. And I remember another thing she also said is, again, and it was in a loving conversation, because the fifth step is a very, you know, tender, vulnerable moment if somebody's effective with their listening and their heart space. And she said, I'm sorry that this tragedy had happened to you. And I'm also sorry to say that the world is full of little girls and little boys who've also been molested. And just those, that kind of loving communication around this helped me see that it wasn't all about me. I mean, right now, we just all had a wonderful banquet. We were served by wonderful, lovely people who are working back there. We ate well. There are children that are going to go to bed hungry tonight in this city, all over. You know, that's not even, you know, there are little kids who are down in coal mines in other country. I mean, there's just, you know, it's more than my pain. And for the first time in that conversation, I got it. And for me, to continue to marinate in that distress was selfish, and I got it. And then regarding the dishonesty, she said, just very simply, she said, have you ever done anything that you want to be forgiven for? Is there anybody who pissed off at you about anything? And yes, I told you, stealing was a big part of my story. I stole food, did a lot of shoplifting of food and different things, and was always getting in my siblings' stuff, and you know, stole from roommates and stuff in college because I needed to feed my habit. Yes, stole from McDonald's. I worked at a McDonald's, used to give away free food, used to steal the game tickets. I'd come in with an empty backpack and go home with my backpack stuffed with the Monopoly game tickets. I'm so lucky I didn't win the $1 million. Seriously, I would have had to make that amends. How do you pay back $1 million? A dollar at a time, I guess. I mean, I'm serious. I would have had to pay that back. Thank God I didn't win. But stuff like that. I mean, I had to make a $300 donation to Ronald McDonald House when I got to an 8-step list because my sponsor didn't believe in living amends. She said, oh, living amends, that's charming. She said, I'm going on the assumption you want to make living amends. That's why you're here. No, love, because she was British, Beryl. She said, no, love, you know, if you stole something, love, somebody's going to be paid back, aren't they? Right. Yeah? So I had to make all the, you know, I had to pay money back. And she said, oh, love, don't worry about it. You're not giving them your money. You're giving them their money back, aren't you? Right. I mean, you know. Oh, God, I could not get out of England quickly enough, you know. But, you know, so those kind of transformations. So once I saw where I was selfish and dishonest and fearful behind continuing to stay in pain and distress about what this wounded bird had done to me, because people who feel good about themselves don't hurt other people. And people who are healthy, men and women who are healthy, are not manhandling little children. I don't know anything about John or Tom and what their lives were about, but I know I don't have enough information to judge them because I've done some awful things in my own life and I don't want to be judged for those things. So I don't want to judge them either. So once that light went on, that was the beginning. That was the beginning of the ice around my heart just starting to crack open, and I'm going to get access. I don't want to hit the microphone and tank your new mic, but like that was when I started getting access to my heart. It started there. And then I have them go on, right? And so they'll read the fourth step part, right? Just bottom of 63 to the end of that chapter. I think it's around 70. And then fifth step is 71 to 75. And that's and I say, you know, take that hour, once you've read your fifth step. I have two sponsees. I get to listen to two fifth steps when I get home next week. Woohoo! But I say, make sure you take that hour and go home, that it suggests, you're right, to take an hour after you've read your fifth step and just relax and just see what comes up for you, right? And then we are going to do the steps 6 and 7. You get the whole 2 paragraphs on the top of page 76, and the second paragraph is the 7-step prayer. But because the 7-step prayer is, right, my Creator, I'm now willing that you shed up all of me, the good and the bad. So I'm going to actually have them identify character defects or shortcomings, right? And Bill said in a Grapevine article somewhere, he said, don't read anything into it. They're the same thing. You know, it's the same thing. He was just playing the synonym. Thank you. So I have them write a list of your character defects. And then I say, and the next thing you have to do is write a list of assets. And you have to come up with the same number of assets as you do defects. Because it says that in the 7-step prayer, right? Good and the bad. So I got to know the balance. And this is all about learning how to be balanced out. And inevitably, I've never had it not work out this way. Somebody has a hard time coming up with the assets, which is another character defect. Not knowing your value. So now you got to find all those assets plus one, right? Because to not know your value as a child of God is a defect. It's either false pride, perhaps. You know, oh, no, I don't know. No, I don't know the good stuff about me. I think I'm better than all of you, but no, I don't know what. I don't know. No, I don't know what's so. No. Come on. Let's break through all that stuff. You can do whatever you want to do here. Just stop lying about it. You can eat whatever you want. Just stop lying about it. I told somebody last night that the great guy that has the 46 years of abstinence at our spiritual maintainers meeting in Woodland Hills, California, this great guy named Ray, and he always says, I can eat whatever. In my absence, he says, I can eat. I said, I have no rules. He said, I use the OA definition of absence, right? You know, be working toward a healthy body weight. You know, being at a healthy body weight or working toward it, and, you know, refraining from compulsive eating and, you know, other compulsive eating behaviors, right? I mean, that wonderful, not, wait, take that back. Let me take that. It's a great thing. It's a great thing. But, because people get confused with absence and food plans and stuff. But what Ray says is he says, I can eat whatever I want, as long as I'm willing to pay the price. As long as I'm willing to pay the price. And that's kind of how I feel. And I'm just not willing to pay the price anymore. And so I've got a lot of things that go on in terms of a food plan, but I'm not willing to lose out on any more of my life over a hot fudge sundae. Not a chance. But I'm not empowered on a daily basis to not eat a hot fudge sundae. So that's why I keep coming here and doing what we do here. So at any rate, so that's what goes on in steps 6 and 7. And then, because the big book says, I made my 8-step list when I took my 4-step. So that means all the names on my 4-step are now going to be on my 8-step. So that meant that John was on my 8-step list. So it's like, do-yo-yo-yo-yo, I owe John an amends. Huh? And my sponsor said, just put the list together. Don't be thinking about a 9th step while you're working on an 8-step list. Just be on your 8th step. So I made the list, right? Just took those names off that 4-step, and they're now on an 8-step list. And I said to my sponsor, you mean I actually owe them an amends? She said, absolutely not. She said, but what I'm going to have you do is write a letter. Because we're not given a lot of direction around the 9th step in the book. So again, make sure your sponsor has a sponsor, perhaps. That works well for me. Lineage of good sponsorship. And what she said is, I don't know if this actually came from here or where this landed for me, but I know at some point I've done it. So either somebody told me to do it or, you know, I told my sponsor what I'm doing with my sponsees, and she said, well, that's a good idea. Why don't you do that? So there's 4 parts to the letter, to an amends letter. And the first part is, so let's just do this. So, dear John, I forgive you for having molested me. Second part, please forgive me for not having forgiven you for having molested me. Right? So it's, I forgive you for molesting me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you. Because remember, I established in the 4th column that I'm part of this equation. I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be a victim in my life. I was victimized as a child. I don't want to be a victim, because the world will give you, if you run around carrying that banner, the world will give you plenty of opportunities to be a victim. It will. It rained on my outdoor wedding, an outdoor wedding reception in Southern California. It rained. Oh, I know you guys are like, that's so funny. That joke never falls flat, but it's in Seattle. You guys are like, yeah. That's so funny. That is so funny. That's hilarious. That's so funny. That's so funny. There's never been a lack of reaction, and there was like a moment of panic, like. Instead, you guys are looking at me like you are a dingbat for having an outdoor wedding, right? What's the matter with you? You dope, you know? Right? That's so funny. That's so funny. Rain comedy. We'll get there, but we don't have time because I've just got a little bit of time and I want to finish this. So, but yeah, post it. Rain comedy. There's funny. There's a funny part of that story. But so second part of the letter. So first part, I forgive you for having molested me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you. Then she says, write something nice about John. Because the problem is, if somebody's done something hurtful to me, then I see him through a telescope, and this is all they are. This is all John was for years. Because he was somebody who worked for my father. And this is all he was. He later, you know, he got rid of the store, and he came to work for my father. And this is all he was to me, right? But when you take your hand away, you realize, oh, he's much more than that. As I am more than my worst moments and the worst of the things that I've done in my life, you know? So she said, write something nice about John. So I wrote something nice about John. And then she said, sign off as high as you can go. And there's nothing higher than love. And it's all going to come out in the wash in the end. But if you don't want to sign, love, Sheila, she said, write cheers or best, right? Sincerely. But just finish that. And then I said, am I going to send this to him? She said, absolutely not. You would never be contacting somebody when you've had that kind of thing. Absolutely not. But you're going to read it to me. I read it to her, and then it ended up in a God box, right? And again, I can't remember if that was the initial sponsor. So this is the only part I'm not clear about. At some point, somebody had me do that, and that was just a wonderful healing thing, because I got free. And it wasn't like, and this is a real struggle for people. You know, I've shared this before in meetings, and on one occasion, I had a woman she went nuts in the audience. That's unkind. She had a huge reaction, and it was very painful to her. My guess is she has a similar experience. And the idea of forgiving the person who'd done this egregious thing to her was horrendous to her. She couldn't hear it, and she needed to get out quickly, and she did, right? And made a loud stir as she did. And I understand that. I can't carry that pain anymore. So it was a real welcome thing for me, and it's been a real welcome thing for people that I've sponsored, because like I said, just about every person that I sponsor has either been molested, or because I sponsor men and women, because my sponsor's fine with it, and my husband is fine with it, and I'm not going to say no to somebody who's a chronic slipper, I'm sorry I can't help you because you're the wrong sex. I'm not going to do that. I've listened to the fifth steps of two men who were serial molesters. One of them was a serial molester, right? And it was, you know, and my sponsor would talk to me at night, because I talked to her in the morning, but she would call me at night and say, are you okay? Because it took 3 days. It wasn't, you know, 8-hour days, but I mean, it took like 6-7 hours over 3 days. She'd say, are you okay? Are you all right? And I'd say, oh, I'm fine. I hugged him at the end. I saw him with the eyes of love, because that's what happens. That's the transformation that happens here. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing what can happen here, yeah? So that's where we end up on eighth and ninth step. And then the tenth step, right, page 84. This is really cool. This is why I love the big book. And the first direction I got from my first Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor said, read 2 pages a day in the big book. She said, because you'll get through that book in about 10 months. And, you know, because obviously reading the big book includes reading the stories in the back. But, and then when you're done, I said, well, what do I do when I'm done? She said, well, do it again. Do it again, right? Do it again. So, I mean, I've been through the book myriad times, and I highlight Nanotite and stuff, and, you know, started in a third edition. Now I'm in various versions of the fourth edition and stuff, and it's wonderful. But what I love about it, and why I'm glad I got that direction, and I'm glad I followed that direction and continue to follow that direction, is because you see things that, I mean, I'm just thoroughly convinced this could not have been there, because how could it have been there? But I had a sponsor point this out to me. This was 8 years ago, eight years ago, I guess. And I'd never really seen this before. And yet I'd highlighted it and annotated it in a couple different versions of my big book, but it hadn't landed. But it talks about step 10 very, very specifically. So it's on page 84. I'm reading the paragraph. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Okay, so here's where it says now. So when you get derailed, and it's going to tell you, thank you very much. I've got 5 minutes. It's going to say, you know, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. What I always tell people is anytime you get derailed, here's where you want to go to. And there's four little steps. I'll read them and then I'll give you a little acronym to help you remember. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So according to the big book, a tenth step is not what you do at night, and it's not written. It's something you are doing throughout the course of the day. So it's what I was able to do in the restaurant and what I do. And I don't anymore. I don't shoot my mouth off at Macy's anymore. But that's what I'm doing. And here's the little acronym. God makes apples sweet, right? That's your little four, because there's four steps, right? First step, God makes apples sweet. Ask God to remove it, right? So please remove my critical nature, right? Whatever it is, my anger, whatever. God makes, M, share it with another man or woman, right? So I'll get out an outreach call. Hey, Mary, it's Sheila, just making a quick call. Do you have a minute? Which is always the first thing to say in an outreach call. Just ask somebody if it's a convenient time for them to talk, right? Because then you'll have their attention. It calms everybody down, makes them easier. But, you know, Mary, is this a good time? Do you have just a minute? Just doing a quick big book 10th step. And I know I'm not the only one who doesn't know a big book 10th step, because people say, yeah, okay, big book 10th step, okay, sure. People don't know, right, because it hasn't landed. And then I'll say, you know what, I just am having some anger come up and I just need to share. Oh, Sheila, what's going on? Oh, no worries, I don't even need to get into the story. Why do I not want to get into the story? Because the 10th step is just a mini 4 step and the big book doesn't want to hear the story. You don't want to hear story. We'll talk more about it because we're going to run out of time here. But I don't even want, and I say, Mary, I don't even need to get into the story. I just need to share with somebody that I got some anger going on and I need to unload it, right? God makes apples. Make amends if necessary. So if I've hurt somebody's feelings or if I've done something to hurt myself, right, because of this pain or distress that I'm going through, then I can make an amends to myself, be kind or something, right, or apologize to my husband or whatever it is I need to do. And then service, right? It says get into service. And what this woman said who taught me this, and she was my sponsor for a short time because she was someone else. Schedules didn't work. But I took this gold nugget that she gave me, and she said 12-step service doesn't count because you're going to get a benefit out of 12-step service. So it says we're supposed to practice these principles in all our affairs. So take this idea you have of doing service in the world and take it out in the world and do it. So I'm a big, I pick up litter in public parks. I pick up, I have a dog, and I pick up other dogs. Dog doo-doo, right? And hand it to my husband, say, take care of it, please. right? But I do that. A public restroom always looks better after I leave it, right? And it's not like I go in there with a mop and pail, right? But I pick up paper towels. I flush toilets. It's just my way of kind of making amends in the world, right? Just making the world a better place. But I'll do that, and I'll tell you, We don't have time, but check out, make sure you're clear about that 4-step process. It's a game changer. And then we move on to step 11, right, which is the page 86, 88 blitz, because how the big book describes it is a step 11 is both what you do at night and what you're doing in the morning, the on awakening. And the on awakening is really cool because there's all kinds of communications you are given about things that you can set your thinking aright starting at the beginning of the day. And tomorrow I'll read you the you know, the things. I put it together. Well, I actually had a sponsee do it and then send it to me, and then I cobbled it together and did it, you know, better. Right? It was great. I love having sponsees, man. It's the best. It's like, it's the best. But because I just have it done in my book, and I would always have them done it in their book, and they would never catch all the steps. So finally I said to this one girl, write it up for me and send it to me. Right? So she did. And she missed some of the stuff, but I just had to add a few things. But it's a nice little communication. And it's just, it's all those things that it directs me to do at the beginning of the day. So it becomes then part of my prayer routine at the beginning of the day, this thing, right? And the first thing is, ask God for my thinking to be free of self-seeking, self-pity, and dishonest motives. And there, again, we'll read it tomorrow. It's a really cool thing. Okay, so that's step 11. And then we are back to now step 12. So now it's, you know, a month and a half, 2 months later, depending on how much material they end up with on a four-step, right, that we then have to deal with in terms of eight-step and ninth-step amends. But a couple months later, now they're reading chapter 7 again because they're on step 12. And they have a whole different take on it. So then they get to that paragraph at the page top of page 96, and they see the value and the necessity of sponsoring somebody who is willing to bless you, to take direction, right? Not because I have a control thing going on, which is what I said to this woman. It's not about that. I said this today. It's not about that. It's not about me holding up hoops and you jump through them. It's about helping you to see the price that you are paying, everybody around you is paying, and if you don't see that, if you don't have that gift of desperation, then I don't know how, if you're not willing to read a chapter and write for 15 minutes, what are you going to do when you get to a four step? What are you going to do when somebody wants you to see the fourth column behind some horrible thing that somebody did to you? And I've heard fifth steps that blew my mind. On retreats, I bring somebody up on Saturday night, somebody who hasn't forgiven somebody of something, because that seems to be the common denominator with people who are chronic slippers, is somebody's not been forgiven for something. And it tends to start with an M. It's uncanny. Molestation, mothers, men, menopause, right? Some kind of mayhem, money. And somebody raised their hand at a retreat once. She said, I got another forgiveness thing. And I said, okay, yeah, what is it? She said, murder. I said, yep. And she went on to say her brother had been murdered years before, and she could never let it go, right? So somebody hasn't forgiven someone of something. And we lay it out there, right? So if somebody isn't willing to read and write, they're never going to take a look at a fourth column with any open heart, right? So it's all, everything all builds on the next step, right? Makes sense. Everything builds, and it all has this wonderful catharsis that we experience when we get to step 12, and then we get to give it away, right? We get to share it so that other people get to be free as well. So that's what I got for tonight. Thank you.